Welcome to Reading Deeply, Fueling the Brain. I'm Tanya Vince, a lead for learning and teaching here at DSB One, and I'm thrilled to have you join us for this month's episode. Today we're diving into chapters 4 and 5 of Know Better, Do Better Comprehension by David and Meredith Lieben, which together make up part 2 of the book. To help unpack the ideas, I'm joined by Amanda Steele, one of our incredible instructional coaches. Amanda, welcome.
Thanks, Tanya. It's great to be here. I'm excited to dive into this section. There's so much to explore about comprehension and how we can support students in building these crucial skills.
I'm also so excited because Kim Lockhart will be joining us today as well. Later on in this episode, I will be introducing her and we will be hearing from her. So part 2 of the book represents a bit of a shift. The earlier chapters focused on the foundation of reading instruction to support comprehension and learning development by focusing on the role of knowledge, vocabulary, morphology, and syntax. But now we're getting into the more technical aspects, looking at the nature of reading comprehension. Walter Kinch's mental model is a key focus here. It describes 3 levels that must be in place for comprehension to occur: the surface level, the text-based level, and the situation model.
That's right, and I love how this model emphasizes the foundational skills students need to truly understand text. The surface level is where we've done and continue to do a lot of work already as a school board, particularly in helping primary students with decoding and fluency. This aligns well with the B2 strand of the new Ontario language curriculum.
Absolutely. Once students can access the text, which gives them the solid foundational skills to comprehend, we really need to focus on the next level, the text base. This is where comprehension becomes more nuanced. It's divided into 2 parts, the macrostructure and the microstructure of the text.
Let's start with macrostructure. This is about understanding the overall structure of a text, how it's organized. For narratives, it's things like setting, protagonist, problem and outcome. For non-narratives, it's structures like cause and effect or problem solution.
And while those are important, the book points out something many of us might not have realized. Teachers often spend too much time on narrative structure because it's easier to teach and more concrete. Students usually pick it up quickly, yet we keep focusing on it year after year. It begins in kindergarten with sequencing stories and writing summaries and continues through the grades. Summarizing involves condensing a story into its most essential points, which requires identifying the main idea. I am currently reading the book Teaching Skills for Complex Text, Deepening Closer Reading in the Classroom, written by Heidi Ann E. Mesmer. It is such an excellent practical book, and I'll refer it to you again in a couple of minutes. But a quote from it that I love is, "Although main idea is the bread and butter of comprehension instruction, teachers often begin with units of text that are too big. What students really need is basic instruction that supports them in finding the main idea in paragraphs before moving on to those larger units of text." This is really, really good food for thought.
Exactly. It's important to shift some of that focus to non-narrative structures, which are often more challenging for students but are critical for comprehension, especially as they move through the grades.
This is where microstructure comes into play. It involves teaching students to understand meaning at the sentence level, focusing on how ideas within sentences connect to support the overall meaning of the text. The book, Teaching Skills for Complex Text, is both accessible and practical, offering clear strategies for teaching students to understand connectives within sentences. It explores different types of connectives and provides systematic teaching plans, activities, and games, easy to use. Additionally, the book includes a chapter on anaphora, which with straightforward explanations, structured teaching approaches, and practical exercises as well. Anaphora refers to the use of a word that replaces or refers to another word used earlier in a sentence or paragraph. So a common example is pronominal substitution, such as in the sentence, "Tanya loves chocolate and she would be happy to eat one each day." So to understand this sentence, students must recognize that "she" refers to Tanya.
That is true. Students need explicit instruction in things like connectives and anaphora. I love that you mentioned Heidi Ann Mesmer's book earlier, Tanya. It's such a practical resource for teaching these concepts.
Amanda, you also brought up an important point when we were planning this episode. Comprehension isn't just about literature discussions or making personal connections.
Right. As we learned in the earlier chapters of Know Better, Do Better Comprehension, comprehension is deeply tied to knowledge, vocabulary, morphology, and etymology. While it's great to have representation in the text we choose, we also need to consider the background knowledge our students bring to the table. If a text is far too removed from their experiences, we may need to use a collection of books to build that knowledge first.
That's such a critical point. And on the flip side, if we only choose texts that align closely with the student's lived experience, they miss those opportunities to infer and make connections because they already have that knowledge.
Exactly. Building vocabulary is another essential piece. Focusing on tier two words, those high utility words that appear in a variety of contexts, can make a really big difference. Prepositions and connecting words are particularly important for helping students understand how ideas in a text fit together. The secret word is connectives.
I am absolutely thrilled to welcome Kim Lockhart to our podcast. Kim is a leading resource in the province of Ontario and an unwavering advocate for the science of reading. Her contributions to education and literacy are nothing short of remarkable. This year alone, as in the year 2024, so I guess that's last year, Kim was featured in the Ontario Human Rights Commission's Right to Read update. She also completed bilingual book studies with La Boîte de Madame Martine, taught two university-level courses at the Faculty of Education at Vancouver Island University, and delivered in-person presentations across five different provinces and territories. If that wasn't impressive enough, Kim has been interviewed on six podcasts, conducted 36 online workshops for school districts, and managed to accomplish so much more, all while somehow finding time to sleep. Kim, your passion and dedication to literacy are truly inspiring, and we are grateful to have you with us today. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me to join you on your podcast. I'm super excited to be here.
My favorite quote from section two of this book is, "We weren't peeking under the hood to understand how our students' minds were processing texts. We weren't focusing on how they achieved an understanding of what they read from the reading itself. In short, we conflated reading and literature in our education ecosystem, and that informed how we approached reading." That's on page 67 of the book. Do you like the analogy of peeking under the hood? And how do you think it applies to the shift in supporting our students' reading comprehension?
To answer your question, yes, I really do love the analogy of peeking under the hood, but it took me a while to understand what David and Meredith actually meant the first time I read it. Maria Martine and I discussed this analogy in our last bilingual book club, and we arrived at how this analogy is like looking under the hood of a car. The car may look like it's running well, but we don't really know what's going on inside under the hood, because sometimes we can't see some possible future problems. In the reading world, peeking under the hood is meant to illustrate and explain the importance of understanding the cognitive processes, the things that we can't see happening in the child's brain that is required for reading comprehension. So this analogy reflects the need to look beyond the surface level outcomes, whether or not a child can answer a question correctly. And we really do, as teachers, need to examine how students are mentally interacting with the texts to build their comprehension. So right now, I'm actually reading the book called Make It Stick. And in the book, they talk a lot about how to move things from our students' short-term memory into long-term memory. And often as teachers, we measure reading comprehension as students' ability to recall things that they've just read in a text. For example, a question might be, the text may be reading about a cat. And some of the questions, reading comprehension questions might be, what was the name of the cat? Or where was the cat in the story? Or what was the cat doing? But really, a lot of these questions, we're just measuring the child's ability to recall things that they've just read. And this is in their short-term working memory. And it's not the same as, you know, long-term deeper comprehension of the text. So reading comprehension is actually a very complex process that requires a deep level of thinking. And we want to make sure as teachers, we're not just asking students to regurgitate or recall information, because that is off, that is housed in our students' short-term memory. And often that information will be forgotten the minute after they answer the question. But we want to make sure that we are helping students make some connections that will help that information move into their long-term memory. And that process of moving things into their working memory and into their long-term memory isn't going to happen unless it's connected to prior knowledge. If students are making meaningful connections to the text and applying it to different working scenarios and using that information in different scenarios. And that is really when that deeper understanding and also that long-term memory is really going to, it's going to make that shift. So for example, just yesterday, my older daughter, she's 14, was studying for a science test, and she was very diligently memorizing some cue cards that she had written out and memorizing a lot of the vocabulary. And she said, you know, Mom, why do I need this information? And really, you know, the test, a lot of the test was just recalling the definitions of words. And I said to her, I said, you know, thankfully she's very good at memorizing. But I also know that that information in science for this particular test wasn't super meaningful to her. Some of the words were like biodiversity, photosynthesis, ecosystems. There were a lot of other bigger scientific words that I can't recall right now, but I said to her, I said, you know, this vocabulary could be very, very important later on if you decide to have a career in science. And you're putting this information into your head so that even though if you don't need it right now, it's going to be part of your background knowledge, and it's going to be part of that vocabulary that you may need later on. So by learning some of these words now, yes, it's just memorizing, and she's most likely not going to retain that information unless it is revisited and she has to bring it back at a later time. So often what I say for an analogy is it's like those Velcro mitts. We need to start building some of that Velcro, some of that background knowledge for new knowledge to stick to. And that came from Natalie Wexler. So back to the peeking under the hood. The Librans critique our traditional approach to teaching reading comprehension. And sometimes they say that we conflate teaching reading with teaching literature. And often we as teachers focus on teaching literacy elements, such as what is the theme, what is the plot, let's talk about the character, sort of the what, where, why, rather than the skills and the knowledge that enable deeper comprehension. So our traditional approach sometimes assumes that students are going to naturally develop the ability to understand text just by being exposed to them or through some, you know, generic strategies like find the main idea, make a prediction, make an inference. But in the book, they argue that educators have to investigate the underlying skills and processes that students are using or actually not using to make sense of the text that they read. So one thing that I have found about my own teaching practice is previously I was teaching like a strategy of the week and selecting books that match the strategy rather than showing students that you know, one book may use a variety of different strategies. So I think sometimes in the teaching world, the training we get is based on making teaching look like a neat and tidy process. So by having a strategy of the week. So this week we're going to talk about making predictions. Here are five books that lend themselves well to making predictions. It makes teaching neat and tidy, but teaching and learning is not actually neat and tidy. It's actually very, very messy, very complicated. And we've tried to make it neat and tidy in a way to sort of like make our jobs a little bit easier. It's like checking a box. So long answer, but so in summary, checking under the hood really is like trying to see what's happening in the child's brain when they're reading. Are they drawing inferences as they're reading? Are they connecting their reading to prior knowledge? And if they don't have that prior knowledge, we have to make sure that we are teaching it. We have to give them a little bit of background knowledge to be that Velcro to make what they're reading help stick. We also have to make sure that, you know, the students are asking questions to check for understanding. Like, do I understand this word? There's a great quote from Dr. Daniel Willingham, whose books I just devour. And this quote really resonated with me. He said, often reading comprehension tests are just knowledge tests in disguise. And by that, we have to not assume that students have background knowledge. And we want to make sure that our reading comprehension tests are actually looking at, do the students have a deeper understanding of what they've just read? And we're not, you know, testing their background knowledge. What is the information that they came into the classroom with? We want to make sure that we are actually looking at, do they understand the knowledge they read in the text? So, that's a long answer, but I really hope that helps give your people a better understanding of what is meant by that. And thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Kim. I really appreciated all the insightful tidbits you shared and the glimpse into how you've applied these ideas in your family life. It's so true that the vocabulary we help our students learn and move into that long-term memory really plays a vital role in their ability to understand text, engage in conversations, and even support their future learning. This reinforces the importance of shifting away from that strategy of the week approach and instead focusing on identifying and teaching the various strategies embedded within each text they're reading. So by equipping our students with these tools, we empower them and support them to read and comprehend more effectively in the future. So we're looking forward to diving deeper into the strategy of the month approach next month with our special guest, Una Malcolm, president of IDEA Ontario. But thanks again, Kim. We honestly, truly valued and are grateful for your visit today. This brings us to the end of part two of the book. These chapters really set the stage for what's coming next. In chapter six, we'll dive into strategies for asking text-based questions and helping students explain their thinking as they work with complex grade-level text.
And chapter seven will take us into the power of close reading, where students mine a small portion of text for meaning, reading it multiple times for different purposes.
Then we'll explore how writing plays a role in learning and comprehension in chapter eight. There's so much to look forward to. Thank you, Amanda, for joining me today.
My pleasure, Tanya. I hope everyone found this discussion helpful and can take something back to their classrooms.
Thanks for listening to Reading Deeply, Fueling the Brain. Don't forget to email the secret word from today's episode to me, Tanya Vince, for your chance to win this month's prize. Until next time, keep fueling those reading brains.